The content of this program is intended for the blind and print impaired audience. Hello, this is Avra Lewis from North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the Essence magazine. Virginia Democrat Jennifer Carroll Foy is running for governor. Back in March, Virginia Delegate Jennifer Carroll Foy was preparing to announce her campaign to the next governor of the Commonwealth in a history-making bid that could see her as the first African-American female governor in the United States, as well as Virginia's first female and Black female governor, if she wins. She would also be the first Black woman ever elected to statewide office in the Commonwealth. However, the novel coronavirus pandemic hit the nation, promoting the delegate to focus on her legislative duties. Foy placed her campaign on hold for 2 months to focus on what Virginians needed the moment, including better health and better pay. The pandemic convinced Foy that now, more than ever, is her time to step up and serve in a higher office. Before COVID-19, families in Virginia were already struggling to pay for their medical bills, earn a decent paycheck, and get ahead. The coronavirus has simply shown what was already beneath the surface, the inequities in our system, the struggles of working families, and the neglect of all of the people who have systematically and historically been left behind, Foy tells Essence. As a delegate, Foy has dialed in on some of the issues that the coronavirus pandemic has highlighted, including pushing for a call for a vote by mail in Virginia in November, emphasizing her concerns about the racial disparities that the country has seen in the face of the pandemic, and calling for extended sick leave. And in a sense, Foy's message, though perhaps a bit more targeted, has not changed very much from when she first spoke to Essence in the early weeks of March, when she was first anticipating her campaign announcement. And she is running, she says, because she understands these issues. Foy was born in Petersburg, Virginia, and raised by her grandmother, who later in life had a stroke and became a quadriplegic. Foy recalled having to decide with her aunt if they were going to pay for the mortgage that month or for the medications keeping her grandmother alive. Throughout her life, Foy has worn many hats. As a former foster mom and now the mother of twins, she was a public defender and is no stranger to breaking the glass ceilings as one of the first Black women to graduate from one of the top military colleges in the country, the Virginia Military Institute. These experiences have given her a unique perspective to tackle the problems that have long plagued Virginia. And so she did. Starting in 2017, she went on to become one of the most historic number of women to be elected to the State House of Delegates. I've dedicated my entire life to fighting for those who can't fight for themselves, and I'm going to continue to fight as the next governor of Virginia, Foy said back in March. My grandmother taught me life lessons and mentored me in a way that inspired me to give back to others. She'd always say, "Jen, if you have it, you have to give it." Foy sponsored the measure to ratify the Equal Rights Amendment, which passed in Virginia, making it the 38th state to ratify the amendment, thus clearing the path to officially ban discrimination based on gender into the Constitution, although there are some legal and political struggles to overcome. She has been leading the fight to expand Medicaid and a host of other initiatives, including delivering broadband to the Southwest and rural Virginia, as well as expanding career and technical education. She has called for criminal justice reform and the end of mass incarceration. She is passionate about fixing the Black maternal health crisis, given her own complicated pregnancy with her twin sons. Since COVID-19, I've transitioned that conversation and called for paid sick days to pass paid family medical leave, that I carry the last session that wasn't successful, fight for PPE and mask for grocery workers, bus drivers, and other essential employees, ensuing that teachers are not laid off and they are paid for furlough and are paid for the rest of their academic school year, Foy says. I'm for increasing the minimum wage and, of course, vote by mail so people don't have to choose between protecting their health and exercising their civil rights and participating in democracy. That is what Virginians are equally waiting for, a champion for the people. I'm not afraid to take on the status quo or stand up against special interest groups or fight for big, bold change. I am a person who will never take no for an answer because I know what's at stake and I know that Virginians can't wait. The permanent Democrat wasn't fazed at all about the delayed campaign in the middle of the pandemic, noting that the campaign has been rallying on social media and workers have been sending out mail to keep in contact with constituents. It's actually encouraging because it forces me to think of new and creative, innovative ways to be able to reach more people in order to broaden our scope of who we should be talking to, Foy says. For Foy, the only way to go is forward, and she is ready to do what it takes to make Virginia better for everyone. I am excited to be in a position to be able to change what the face of leadership in Virginia looks like, she said back in March. But I am also laser focused on what Virginia needs and making good on the promises that I've kept to help build a better Virginia by increasing access to healthcare, bringing diverse high-paying jobs across the Commonwealth, and making sure that we leave no community behind. The next article is titled, As Second Wave of PPP Relief Nears Depletion, Black-Owned Bank Steps In. By now, you've likely heard about the deeply fragile state of Black-owned businesses in the time of COVID-19. Back in March, as shelter-in-place orders rapidly spread nationwide, non-essential small businesses were among the first to shutter their doors. On April 3rd, the Paycheck Protection Program, PPP, was launched. $349 billion was set aside to aid small businesses with payroll, rent, and other basic expenditures. Unfortunately, the first-come, first-served plan left Black businesses in the dust. Large corporations hoarded aid like panicked shoppers clawing for the last toilet paper roll during a pandemic. Something wasn't right about how they introduced the first PPP wave. They were just too many unanswered questions, says Terry Williams, owner and president of One United Bank, the biggest Black-owned bank in the United States. The larger banks were given a significant advantage. They were told about the program early. Something had to be done. The second wave, on April 27th, the Small Business Administration began accepting applications for the second round of PPP funds, an effort launched in part to right the wrongs of its initial rollout. Part of their correction involved the SBA reaching out to smaller institutions like One United Bank to ensure aid was more accessible to Black-owned small businesses. A lot of Black businesses that are our customers, as well as just businesses that were know of, that we know of were applying to the program and not getting funding. In fact, we knew very few that actually got funds, says Williams. Once she and the One United team observed the lack of support for Black businesses, they knew they had to be a part of the second round efforts. In an April study, the Center for Responsible Lending, CRL, concluded that roughly 95% of Black-owned businesses stand close to no chance of receiving a PPP loan through a mainstream bank or credit union. Smaller institutions just might be the way to go. The application game. However, finding the right bank is only the first obstacle. The application process can in itself be cumbersome, especially for first-time loan applicants. If you're a small business owner, a word of advice, be sure to dot your I's and cross your T's. Details matter. Also, don't ask for a penny more than what you actually need. There are a couple of things that we are finding that tend to create hurdles for our community, Williams says. One is the documentation. The documentation that's required to apply for a loan is very specific about what the SBA needs. She explains that a combination of tax returns and, in some cases, bank statements and organizational documents is needed. Also, while there isn't a credit review, there is a need for a very specific legal and tax documentation. It's something many long-term mom-and-pop businesses within our community simply just don't have. They either haven't filed their tax returns or they don't have the documentation, but you can't get approved without it. So that's one of the things, Williams explains. The second thing is the actual loan amount. The SBA has, on their website, a way to actually calculate what the loan amount has to be, and it's 2.5 times your payroll. So if you're a small business owner in need of a loan who perhaps hoped to get a little extra cushion to carry you over, beware. Be aware. Those two things are what we're finding ends up slowing down the process and stopping people from getting approved, says Williams. The future. A recent nationwide survey conducted by Global Strategy Group in partnership with Color of Change and Unidos US revealed that only 12% of Black and Latino small business owners who applied for loans in the government's $650 billion Paycheck Protection Program received the funds they applied for. While Williams explains that One United is accepting applications for as long as funds are available, the clock is ticking. The government aid will likely run dry in a matter of weeks, and while more efforts were made this time around to support smaller businesses, it's already clear that more needs to be done. As for Black-owned businesses and whether they can withstand such challenging times, Williams, after spending 30 years in the big and small banking businesses, remains ever optimistic about the future. I've been listening to Sounds of Blacknesses, Optimistic. That's my theme for this time, Williams reflects. I do think we will get through the worst of this, and then I think we should create. We should create new businesses. We should really use our creativity to come out of this pandemic and bloom. That's my advice to everyone, whatever you do. The next article is titled, Doja Cat Denies Racist Accusations. I'm sorry to everyone I offended. Doja Cat has been declawed by Black Twitter. The say-so, quote-unquote, rapper issued a public apology Sunday after receiving backlash over her presence in chat rooms containing alt-right content and users and a controversial resurfaced song called Didn't Do Nothing. Over the weekend, hashtags such as hashtag Doja Cat is over Party, and hashtag Only Clans trended on Twitter, with many fans calling for an explanation from the rapper, whose birth name is Amalaranta Dalani. Usually flippant in the face of call-out culture, the chart-topping artist was seemingly contrite in the statement she posted on Instagram. "I want to address what's been happening on Twitter," she began in a statement. "I've used public chat rooms to socialize since I was a child. I shouldn't have been on some of those chat room sites, but I personally have never been involved in any racist conversations. I'm sorry to everyone I offended." Doja went on to reject the public's interpretation of her 2015 song, Dinda Nuffin, after many claimed the rapper was mockingly police brutality. The rapper said that instead she was attempting to reclaim the term, which is used by racists typically referring to unnamed black men and women gunned down by the police after it was used to insult her. "I'm a black woman. Half of my family is black from South Africa, and I'm very proud of where I come from. As for the old song that's resurfaced, it was in no way tied to anything outside of my own personal experience. It was written in response to people who often use that term to hurt me," she wrote, admitting it was a poor choice. "I made an attempt to flip its meaning, but recognized that it was a bad decision to use the term in my music," she added. "I understand my influence and impact, and I'm taking this all very seriously." Doja concluded by saying that she loves her fans and that she's sorry for upsetting or hurting any of you. "That's not my character, and I'm determined to show that everyone moving forward." This isn't the first time Doja has been called out for her prejudice. In 2018, she ended up apologizing for a 2015 homophobic tweet that resurfaced. Initially, however, she tried to defend herself. We are moving on to another article titled, "See the Sweet Gift Beyoncé Gave Megan Thee Stallion After Savage Remix Hits Number One." The Hot Girls and the Beehive has sent the Savage Remix to the top of the charts. Megan Thee Stallion and Beyoncé finally have the number one record on the Billboard Hot 100 chart, and the ladies are celebrating in their own way. The track from Houston natives previously ascended to the number two slot earlier this month before slipping a few notches down to number five. This marks Megan's first number one of the rap career. And it's also a significant achievement for Beyoncé, as it ushers her into a rare category of artists who have had hits in four separate decades. And since she's the queen, it was only fitting that Beyoncé gifted Megan a sweet gift to celebrate her achievement, a bouquet of pink and white flowers with a sentimental note. It read, "Congrats on your number one, queen. Love, B." Megan also celebrated the win by sharing her excitement with her hotties on Instagram. "Hotties, we are number one on the Hot 100 for the first time ever. We did it, thank God. This is our first, but it sure won't be our last. I love y'all so much. Houston, we got one. Pound Savage," she wrote in a caption. Congrats, Megan and Bae. So we're going to move along to the next article, which is titled "Masterclass: Breaking Down Lizzo's Carefree Style." When it comes to her aesthetic, Lizzo continues to shatter glass ceilings, defying antiquated stereotype that curvy girls can't wear high fashion. The performer has been on nearly every best dressed list sporting designer brands, including Versace, Valentino, and Marc Jacobs, to name a few. Her sassy social media clapbacks to her critics have helped her propel her style to goodness status. everything the singer wears becomes a hot topic as more and more designers line up at her door waiting to dress the groundbreaking queen. Her music, which is just as iconic as her ensembles, directly reflects what it means to be truly self-loving and carefree. We could all take a page from Lizzo's book on how to get your confidence shine through. Luckily, we've taken the time to dissect the true hurts performers' trademarks look. It's time to step up your game. Class is in session. You can never go wrong in one. And let's be honest, a skin-tight bodycon fit was made for curves. While Lizzo cherishes a dramatic gown, she also loves flaunting those gams in a playful number. Take a cue from the songstress and let your curves do the talking in a sexy getup. No matter the occasion, Lizzo sparkles. She has hit too many red carpets to count. At each appearance, she debuted stunning high-end pieces. There are no rules when this diva steps into the front of the camera. Check out her bright and red gown emblazed with the word serene for the proof. We may not all be performing to sold-out arenas, but there is one lesson we can learn from Lizzo's showstoppers. Put on what makes you feel comfortable and confident, even if it means sporting a bright orange bodysuit. We're going to move along to the next article, which is titled, Meet the Black Beauty Influencers Picked for the 2020-pound Sephora Squad. This week, Sephora unveiled its second annual Pound Sephora Squad, much to the delight of the diversity advocates everywhere. The group showcases beauty in such vast ways, even across the gender and size, but most notable is, of course, the racial mix of the group. And it's hard not to notice that approximately one-third of the influencers that were chosen are Black. The haters will say it's Photoshop, but they can't deny is the fact that in 2020, there are still gaps in diversity and inclusion in ad campaigns, product development, labs, and C-suites for major beauty brands. So for a young Black girl or boy to see themselves reflected in a beauty ambassador for a giant retailer such as Sephora is very major. What is really exciting about this program is the representation and advocacy that was part of the candidate journey. Because it's truly a reflection of company values, Emmy Brown Berland, Vice President of Content Strategy at Sephora, tells Essence, "We are champions of inclusion, beauty, and creating a culture where everyone can feel welcome. And the Sephora hashtag Sephora Squad application process was no different." Berland also emphasized that the squad finalist audience sizes wasn't a consideration. Some even have less than 1,000 followers on social media. Each candidate advocated for themselves and brought a certain connection, as well as really show their passion for beauty. This is only the second hashtag Sephora Squad, as the initiative just launched in 2019 in partnership with Four as a one-of-a-kind influencer program. Soon after its launch, it was expanded to include Sephora employees as well. The goal of this program was to celebrate inclusiveness through outreach, sharing, education, in partnership with collaborators. Sephora said in a statement, "The members chosen as part of the hashtag Sephora Squad are not only advocates for beauty, but also for body positivity, self-esteem, kindness, and courage. Squad members are paid for the partnerships and collaborate with the retailer on a variety of projects and opportunities throughout the year." Along with new members announced on Tuesday, Sephora also launched partners through the end of the year, which includes well-known influencers Monica Vellos, Tennille Jenkins, and Tiff Benson. The next article is titled, Kel Mitchell and Asia Lee Use This TikTok Challenge for Their Gender Reveal. TikTok has become the social media platform du jour for all of your favorite celebrities. Even when it comes to making baby announcements, comedian Kel Mitchell and his wife, singer Asia Lee, are the latest celebrity parents to put a smile on our faces with a dope TikTok-inspired ginger reveal. Mitchell and Lee, who are already parents to an adorable 2-year-old daughter named Wisdom, recently revealed they are having another child. The couple took part in the Wipe It Down challenge to reveal the gender of their new bundle of joy. The video starts off with Michelle cleaning his bathroom mirror. As he wipes, Lee suddenly pops up in the reflection while rubbing her growing baby bump. In the second frame, their daughter jumps in with the mom wearing a pink big sister shirt. The family of three gather together, and the third shot right before the words, "It's a boy," pops up on the screen. This will be the fourth child for Mitchell, who got his start on the Nickelodeon shows All That and Kenan and Kale. He also shares two children, 21-year-old Song Lyric and 18-year-old daughter Allure and ex-wife Taisha Hampton Mitchell. During an episode of Essence Yes Girl podcast, Mitchell told the story of how he and his wife met. He reveals that he and Lee started off as friends, then decided to take this slow while dating. "We were on a Ferris wheel, and the Ferris wheel shook a little," he recalls. "She was scared, and she jumped into my arms. And at that moment, I knew. It was just like I knew in that moment, but I didn't say anything. And as we were dating later, I spoke about that, and she said she knew at that time as well." The Mitchells are no strangers to creative pregnancy announcements. In 2017, they declared they were welcoming their daughter Wisdom with a clever Good Burger themed pregnancy announcement, orange soda and all. The next article is titled "Ray J and Princess Love Unite to Celebrate Their Daughter Melody's Second Birthday." Even though Ray J and his wife, Princess Love, are in the midst of a divorce, they have no issues putting their problems to the side to celebrate their children. In celebration of their daughter Melody's second birthday, the reality TV couple came together for a bubble guppies themed party for their little one. Their birthday girl smiled from ear to ear as family and friends gathered around to watch her blow out the candles. "At 2:52 p.m. today, my baby Melody was born," Love wrote under an Instagram post dedicated to her baby girl. "The happiest, smartest, and sweetest girl I've ever known. Thank you for choosing me to be your mommy. I love you more and more every day. Happy second birthday, baby." Well, it looks like we have run out of time for today's episode of Essence. We hope you have enjoyed it, and be sure to listen next time. I am Avery Lewis, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for the blind and print-impaired audience. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast on our website, www.ncreadingservice.org. That once again, www.ncreadingservice.org. If you have any questions or comments, please call us at 919-832-5138. 919-832-5138. So long until next time.